The Fan on Demand. It's Sunday morning with David Grossman, covering the biggest stories in high school, college, and university sports. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, relax. I'm not getting married. But I know somebody else who is today. Good morning. David Grossman's my name. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Santa Claus Parade in Toronto. The big guy's coming with his wife. But there's going to be a wedding today. And we got some great stories on the show. One of them involves Miranda Jollymore and Ibrahim Kamal. They're going to tie the knot, and get this, in a boxing ring. Not often you get a guest, or maybe two guests, wanting to talk about sports on the day they're getting married. But these two are, shall I say, outstanding individuals and great athletes as well. And we're going to say good morning to them because they're joining us as they have to get ready for all the festivities, et cetera. I don't know if the jolly old guy is going to show up or not there or not, but we want to welcome to Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Miranda Jollymore and Ibrahim Kamal. How you doing?
We're good. Thank you.
So who's more excited? Is it Miranda who can hardly wait for that actual moment to happen, or is it you, Ibrahim, thinking that all these years of being a single guy are about to go?
I think we'll be more excited once everything's over, once we can actually live our lives together. Like, leading up to this, oh, so much running around, so much work. But who's more excited, me or you?
Him, for sure.
Ibrahim,
him.
You're an 8-time Canadian national champ in the boxing ring, and I would imagine your knees are shaking more now than when you get into a match.
Truthfully, that is true. I'm never nervous for a fight or at all, and for this whole lead-up thing,
it's funny. He goes, baby, you know that feeling before a fight? He goes, I have that multiplied by like 10,000.
Miranda, you're from Nova Scotia. You're a student at York University. Sure. I don't explain to us, how does a 5'4", 120-pound blonde get introduced to boxing?
You know, actually, I was very lucky because I've been a competitive athlete in another sport my whole life, and I always thought of boxing as the elite athletes. When I moved to Toronto, I actually got introduced to Egerton Marcus, and my first day in the boxing gym, literally, I was like, this is amazing. And it actually stems back to the fact that, you know, in Canada, actually, one in three girls is affected by some form of sexual abuse before the age of 18, and it just so happens I was one of those girls. And boxing actually was the thing that gave me my power back. And it's the only place in the world where girls don't necessarily have to be a girl. You're just an athlete. You don't have to be polite. You don't have to fit a specific mold. You just get to be yourself. So, it's the most, empowering experience I've ever had, really.
Okay, Ibrahim, tell us how it started. And I'm not talking about the boxing here. I'm talking about the winky-winky stuff. You know, pitching the marriage phrase to Miranda, did it all happen in a boxing ring? Did he get down on your knees and smiles and beg her to marry you?
I wish it was like that. It was actually, I got to go through the whole story, how I actually even met. Like, back 2007, she started coming to Cabbage Town, and she's having a documentary done on her. And first thing that came to my mind was, who in the world is she? Are those cameras for me? Like, I thought I deserved to be followed, right? So anyways, we were just in the gym, like, hi, how are you? Okay. And then go on, do your thing, your workout, and then go home. And then the following year, 2008, actually Peter Wiley, from the director at Cabbage Town Boxing, invited us both to a boxing gala event. And we started talking there, and outside of the gym, like outside of the gym environment, we talked as like humans type of thing, right? Not in the athletics world or anything like that. And we just really clicked.
Miranda, what made you come up with the idea of exchanging rings in the ring itself? You know, having a wedding at a boxing gym, and I would imagine you're going to probably have this wedding gown, but likely no boxing gloves, right?
We actually have a wedding gown and boxing gloves. Oh. We have both. But, you know, actually, because we met in the gym and I've never really been a traditionalist, my aunt was suggested, you know, why not get married in the ring? And I was like, wow, that's perfect. And in the beginning, it was hard to get the family on board. But as soon as we started, you know, telling everyone what our story was, they're like, what better place? So for us, I think, you know, the elegance and the rawness of the gym, you know, there's nothing better than that. And, I mean, boxing is our life, both of us. So, you know, it's a perfect place to share that with, you know, our loved ones.
Our guests this morning, Miranda Jollymore, Ibrahim Kamal, both boxers at the Cabbage Town Club in Toronto, and both of them, well, getting married to each other today. Ibrahim, you box in a lightweight category, an 8-time Canadian national champ. And you climbed into the professional ranks. Now I think you're undefeated with 5 wins by a knockout. How did you get the nickname Firearm?
Well, it's very funny. Because when I was starting boxing, when I came to Canada, I was 11 years old, and I was at a gym. My dad was actually trying to translate from Arabic. It's supposed to equal as in speedy hands type of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when you literally translate the words word by word, it comes up to firearm. So, I mean, whenever they introduce Ibrahim Firearm Kamal, everybody's like, firearm, what kind of nickname is that? Are you a gun? What's this? Right? But in actuality, it's supposed to be like quick hands. But when you translate it word to word from Arabic to English, it comes up as firearm.
You gave up boxing, Miranda, after, I believe it was an injury. You had a spinal injury?
Correct.
I understand that now you're involved in a charity group, a special charity that's helping youngsters learn the sport of boxing. Can you elaborate a bit about it?
Yeah, so basically after I got injured, I had a herniated disc in my back explode. And at that time, I was really sad, and it was actually Ibrahim who, you know, encouraged me to do what I love, which I was a mortgage broker, and what I actually, after being injured, I want to stay connected to the sport. So I started a program with Youth Assisting Youth where we offered free boxing classes to youth at risk in our community. And we actually partnered up with the Toronto Police, and together we worked to break down barriers between community cops and kids, focusing on basically just living a healthy lifestyle. So we do nutrition, we do mentorship, we do job training. So it's just all about being community champions. So I'm not necessarily looking for a world champion, but we're looking for community champions.
Are you surprised that boxing is not offered as a sport in our schools?
You know, this is an uphill battle that I face daily, and that administrators feel that boxing is brutal and violent. And, you know, for me specifically, boxing has never been about violence. It's about empowerment. And a lot of people, if they only understood, if kids had an outlet to actually get that stress out, there would be not as many bullies, and people would have the confidence not to actually pick on other people. But the teachers and administrators, they just feel boxing is violent, and they don't want to take the time to actually even learn about what it's all about.
Ibrahim, have you, or for that matter, Miranda, have either of you had a concussion from boxing?
Never, tell you the truth. I had over 132 amateur fights, 6 professional fights, and countless rounds of sparring. I'd say over 10,000 rounds of sparring. And truthfully, no. I mean, yeah, you do get stunned here and there, yeah, but no effects of any concussion, no symptoms. But part of the reason is because boxing, you know where the punches are going to come from. It's 3 basic punches: the straight punches, the hooks, or the uppercuts. So you're kind of already prepared for those punches. And when you compare it to the other sports, for example, like hockey and football, how those guys are really getting their concussions is just the blind side type of hits, things that you don't see, right? But as in boxing, you're not allowed to hit behind the head and no elbows or anything like that. So you're prepared to withstand the punches, really.
Miranda, I'm told that boxing, I may be wrong on this, that's why I need you to correct me. I'm told that it's on a decline, mm-hmm. and it's a significant decline because of all the attention, the hype that goes towards mixed martial arts. What are your thoughts about that?
You know, it's unfortunate, but I mean, Dana White from the UFC, he's done an amazing job marketing, and we all know really everything is about your marketing. It's not necessarily the substance behind the product, it's how you market it. And right now, there hasn't been any, first of all, fighters as we had 20 years ago, and now, you know, we don't have the same promotion that the UFC has. And, you know, when Dana White's been great in getting the UFC in Ontario, which is actually helping boxing, because in Ontario, the way that it's sanctioned, it's much more challenging to make fights happen. And now that Dana is coming here, he's actually helping loosen the rules for boxing as well. So it's still a good thing, and hopefully, you know, also women's boxing just got introduced to the Olympics for the next Olympics. So for us, it's still, you know, there's been a lot of really great strides, even though, you know, you don't have the big heavyweights that we're used to. Hopefully in the years to come, we will.
I wouldn't dare say this, Ibrahim, to you face to face, because you're a boxer and I'm not. But a lot of people tell me, including your soon to be wife, that you're a bit of a what they call a snob in the gym. And then you met this lovely, attractive woman, Miranda. How is that all going to change now that you're going to tie the knot in matrimony?
Oh, I never thought of myself as a snob to begin with.
They never do.
No, but I don't know. Everybody thinks I'm a prima donna or something like that. But, well, with Miranda, she's got my heart, and that's the main thing. Like, I'm married, and I'm good now.
You better have a Visa card or some kind of a credit card.
Is that you? Waiting for the big payday.
There you go. Ibrahim, you grew up in Libya.
Yeah.
I'm kind of interested in your feelings about, or your thoughts about what's gone on in that country in the past little while.
Well, truthfully, it's very good, actually, to have a Gaddafi outed from Libya. Like, mind you, I was still young growing up there, but when I start putting things together nowadays here, you start really realizing how hard it was growing up there. And really, Gaddafi himself did a lot of horrible things, truthfully.
Well, both of you, I know you've got lots to do before you look at each other and say, I do. Congratulations on your marriage a little bit later on today.
Thank you so much.
If you get a chance, there is a parade. You know, you can go down and see Santa Claus.
And true enough.
Thank you for fitting us and Sportsnet 590 The Fan in on this special occasion. All the best to you.
Thank you so much for having us.
You're very welcome. Miranda Jollymore and Ibrahim Kamal, boxers, met in the ring. Now wedding bells for both of them. I know some married people who could use some boxing gloves in their discussions. Anyway, Dan Riccio, great music to introduce this segment. And the gong we'll probably hear will be the time for us to break. Sunday morning with David Grossman on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
-14 degrees, balmy spring weather in downtown Toronto. But don't let it fool you. Those temperatures are going to drop off quickly. So bring your gloves and warm clothing if you're going to the Santa Claus parade. David Grossman's my name. This is Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Yeah, it is November the 20th, and we're lucky. We got some great weather conditions. Big Santa Claus parade's going to be tying up the streets in downtown Toronto. Already it is. If you're looking for a quick way to get through the city, suggestion is try take the highways. Probably the best way. Interesting. Also, how you don't hear many people talk about the closures of the roads when it comes to something as festive as this. Well, our next guest decided to go back to college at the age of 35, and he wanted to be involved in sports programs as well, so he chose men's volleyball. The school he's at is George Brown College in Toronto, and I had a chance the other day to sneak up and watch him play. You got to be careful, because a lot of these athletes, when they know they're there, they just... The focus comes off the game. Anyway, he's good at what he does, and he's also looked upon as the elderly person on the team, probably obviously because of his age, or the grandpa, as some people call him. But there's a significant role that he plays with the Huskies as a leader, and helps out his head coach as well. I'm talking about the player on the team, and let's say hello to Sean Bennett, who's joining us this morning. Thanks for being with us, Sean. How are you?
I'm good, David. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. So for you, back in high school, a lot of people have some difficulties and it really doesn't work out. You went to Marion Academy, also went to Father Henry Carr, and you took some time off, as you told me, because high school really wasn't your cup of tea. How did you get involved in volleyball?
Initially, I was just playing a lot of sports as a kid, and volleyball came naturally, so I kind of picked it up, and I took a real liking to it, so I continued playing throughout my high school years.
And I would imagine when you were in high school and you had an opportunity to play sports, it happened for me as well, anything to get out of class, right?
Yeah, most definitely. You know, there's anything to get out of the bookwork sometimes.
You went back to college earlier this year, I think it was January, and you enrolled at George Brown in general arts. How tough was it for a guy who is probably close to being twice as old as the average college student to get back into the classroom when you've been away from it for so long?
Yeah, it was a big decision I made. Like I said, it was a big jump I had to do. It wasn't easy, but I figured that my future would have been a lot better off if I was in school and did get my certification than if I did stay away and end up just continuing the way it was.
Were you a bit rusty when it came to volleyball practices and getting out there as a break from the necessary homework and studies that you had to do? I understand that when you went to George Brown, it had been something like 10, 12 years before you had last played volleyball?
Yes, that's correct. I believe that I'm a natural athlete, so there was initial rest that took about a few months to shake off, but continue practicing, and I got a good team members, so it doesn't end up working out. Like right now, I'm almost back to 100%, and we're ready to take this league by storm.
You must have been able to see the reaction on your teammates, especially at practice, when they saw you come out there, and they thought maybe you were the coach or an assistant or an advisor, and when they found out that, no, you wanted to be on the team, what kind of camaraderie was there at the beginning? Were they sort of questioning as to who is this old guy?
A little bit, but I think that all changed as soon as we started practice together and they see my work ethic and how we worked well together and how I'm willing to work just as hard as anybody else on the team for my spot.
I remember when I was back in school, and that goes back a few years,
right.
There's always this, when you play sport, there's this urge, there's this appetite, a lot of hype to go out there and win and do the best you possibly can. Did you find that was the same for you when you went back to play volleyball, or was it just a case of a lot of guys your age, my age, our age, mm-hmm. of wanting to stay in shape?
Well, I've always been fairly in good shape throughout my whole life, but I did lose the hunger initially. Like I said, after high school, I did lose the hunger. But when I did return, an even bigger hunger has appeared, and like I said, I'm really into it, and I'm really hungry to achieve some of my goals at this volleyball.
Now, you were telling me, and I found this to be an interesting story, that you were what was considered the guy in charge, the man, for several years. I don't know if it was 4 or 5 years at the Air Canada Centre, where you were the guy who was responsible for making sure that the ice was ready or there just was no NHL game.
Oh, well, that's correct. It was make sure the ice was ready and a lot of other things. There's a lot of business, behind-the-scenes stuff that goes on that got to be prepped for the events that go on in the Air Canada Centre. And yes, that was a big part of that.
I would imagine you needed to know something about air conditioning, refrigeration. Where'd you get all that from?
One of my coaches through the OVA owned his own heating air conditioning business. And he gave me an opportunity right out of high school to actually work with the company. And I was actually very successful because he was a very good teacher and ended up picking up a career in the business.
27 minutes after 8 o'clock on this Sunday morning with David Grossman. Our guest is Sean Bennett, who's a student at George Brown College, 6'2", middle hitter on the volleyball. One of the biggest challenges for you in not only the return to the classroom, but also to sport itself?
Some of the biggest challenges is basically staying focused and kind of just overcoming the doubt that people had in me and the doubt that I might have had in myself, and just to go out there, give it my all on and off the court. Because first of all, I'm not in school basically for volleyball. I'm there to acquire my certification in heating and refrigeration. Volleyball comes secondary. But volleyball does keep me motivated and keep me in school and just another reason to get me through this challenge that I have in front of me.
How difficult for you is it to be a father? You're a father of two children.
Yes, Sean and Samuel.
At the same time, go back to school, carry out your responsibilities to your children, and everything else that you do, including playing volleyball.
Yeah, like I said, it's hard. I have to really manage my time carefully because there's sometimes not enough hours in the day. And like I said, my kids have been really good with it. My baby mother has been really good with it. She's helping me out a lot. And on the whole, it's been working out really well for us for now.
On the volleyball court for you and your teammates, it started out great. You won your first game, and then it was a tailspin. I think it's five now losses in a row.
Yes, yes.
Explain, is it the other competition? The other team's better? Does your team tend to get on a little bit of a downer after you lose two or three or four in a row, and you need something to turn this streak around?
Well, what I believe it is, we went out to Sudbury and we won the Northern Cup. Then we came back and we won our initial first game. So I think we got a little bit on a cloud there for a second. And we've now played some of the more elite teams in our division, which right now we can play with them. But it's just that, we're a young team, and again, we're just starting to gel together. So I feel in another month or two, when we get a little bit better, we're going to be right up there with them, and we'll be putting those wins in the win column.
No is never the answer. These are a couple of words you're telling me is your personal motto. How do you come up with that?
I believe it was when I just came back to school and I kept hearing it, like, no, you shouldn't do it, and no, you won't be able to get through it, and no, there's not enough money, and I just kept hearing no, and kept hearing no. And I eventually just started throwing those no's into yeses. Like, I'd go to school, and they'd say, oh, well, you won't be able to get into this course. You'd have to do this and this and this, and I've done it, and then I came in and I brought out my paperwork and they're like, okay, well, you've done it. Yes, you can get in. I started to know I could turn those no's into yeses. So that became my motto.
Josh Nickel, the coach of the George Brown College team, was telling me that he looks at you as not only a great athlete that fits into the team, but also from the standpoint of helping him as an assistant type coach, someone who offers a form of leadership. You know, I know coaches who are a little bit younger than some athletes, and that's the same situation that you have at George Brown. How does that work out? What's the relationship between you and the head coach?
Well, things are good between Josh and I. He's a really good coach. He's a player's coach. He'll sit down, like, he'll get on you when he needs to get on you, but at the end of the day, he can be your friend as well. As for a leadership role, I don't mind it because that's the role I like to take in my everyday life as well as on the court. But I guess he looks up to me because I'm the oldest guy and I've played a lot of volleyball. So I don't mind it. I like to kind of share my experiences with the guys and help them out any way they can. Actually, they help me out as well, too, because these are a lot of talented athletes on my team. And they do give me a lot of insights into the new factors of the game.
Sean Bennett's joining us. He's a middle hitter, 6'2", with George Brown College's volleyball team. Now, let's go back to the days of high school and club volleyball for you, and then fast forward it to where you are today. Is there much of a change in the game from those years? I mean, is the talent just as good, if not better? What about the speed of the game?
To be honest, I'm going to say that the talent was actually better prior. Mind you, it's not bad. It's very good right now. But just before, it was just a little bit more difficult. We didn't have the libero to substitute out the middle hitter. We didn't have the every point scoring. You actually had to side out first and then get another point, which is, in a sense, you'd have to get 2 points in order to get one. And just those differences, I'm just finding it's getting adapted to, and just the changes. It's a little bit different, but like I said, I got my teammates to help me through it.
You were born in Jamaica. What made you choose volleyball? Jamaica's turned out some outstanding distance runners and also some speedsters, too.
Right, correct. I did run at an early age, but like I said, something between me and volleyball, it was just like I acquired a liking for it, and I was very good at it, so it became my favorite sport to play.
So you go back to practice tomorrow. It's your job, it's the job of the head coach, Josh Nickel, as well, to get this George Brown volleyball team back on the winning trail. How hard is it going to be, knowing you're now 1-5?
Well, it's going to be a tough road, but I'm sure everybody on the team, including myself, is willing to work for it. So we're just going to get back into the gym, get practicing, keep practicing, and keep getting better.
Have you seen any of the university volleyball games? I'm just wondering what your thoughts are of an exhibition match between a college team and a university team. Are they the caliber of the play? Is it a lot different, or is it very similar?
I haven't seen much unless it's been online, but the caliber seems to be a little better in the university level. But I would be all for, you know what I mean, an exhibition match against any university team.
You're youthful. At the age of 35, you must have learned something about the game of volleyball since your return. What's it been?
Mostly the difference now in the game now is usually if two teams, they go at it and they're battling back and forth, and it's usually the team that pushes the hardest that'll usually outcome be the winner. Because now I notice that they'll fight, they'll get side out, until one person gets like 2-3 side outs in a row, and then that's usually the team that's going to be the winner. And another thing is usually the team that's the better team after 25 that tightens up and doesn't make as many mistakes after 25 usually, again, is the winner of the match.
Sean Bennett, we appreciate your time this morning. Good luck in the classroom, and good luck in changing the numbers around from George Brown's record of 1 win and 5 losses, hopefully into a productive season as well. Thank you again.
Thank you, David, for having me.
35 years old, decided to go back to school. Smart move on his part, improve on his education and career and his ambition to, I guess, make a couple more bucks. Why not play some volleyball at the same time, help some of the younger kids out, and also to show his experience, I guess his experience, his leadership role. You can see him in game action next Saturday afternoon when Cambrian College of Sudbury comes to Toronto to play the Huskies. We're going to pause for a sports update. And when we come back, we're going to talk to a student of the game, and the game is basketball. He was down in the U.S., played at a very popular high school, Finley Prep, came back to improve on his grades, get the necessary credits, before moving on to Iowa State University, where he'll be in September. Naz Long is on deck. Stay with us. I'm David Grossman. It's Sunday morning on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
I'll tip my hat to the new Constitution. Think
with Sunday morning on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. My name is David Grossman. Hope you're having a good start to the day. Well, the National Basketball League, very unfortunate what's going on. Let's hope that just maybe people can get together, be happy, like the players and the owners, and thinking a little bit about the fans, like us, who are losing out. I know one player who would like to someday make it to the National Basketball League, and hopefully if things go well, he will be there. Or he could be playing the pro game somewhere else. He attends St. Martin High School in Mississauga. Now, St. Martin is not what you would call a powerhouse when it comes to the sport of basketball. And he's not there strictly to play the game. His talent probably exceeds a lot of people his age in this country. He's considered to be one of the better teenage graduating players in Canada. But I've never seen him play, so I can't judge for myself. I know I've had a chance to speak to his coach. I had a chance to talk with his mother. I've had a chance to talk with a lot of people who've played against him. And especially the athletes, they marvel. Not only because he's good at the game, he's not cocky, but he's also intelligent. And we're delighted that he could spend a few moments with us this morning. I'm talking about Nazareth. He goes by the name Naz Long, and he's on the phone with us now. How you doing, Naz?
I'm good, sir. How you doing?
Very well, thank you. You're 6'4".
Yes, sir.
And a point guard. Basketball now has become a big part of your life. And I would imagine a lot of universities and colleges, both sides of the border, have been or were chasing you. You verbally committed to Iowa State University, but I'm wondering, can you still change your mind? Can you go somewhere else?
You know, I feel like even if I could, I wouldn't, man. I feel like that's going to be my home. That's somewhere where I want to be. That's definitely something that I'm going to be a part of next year.
What made Iowa State stand out? Here you are, a Toronto boy, Mississauga boy, Canadian. I mean, a big continent that we have. Why Iowa State?
Basically, the recruiting class that they have coming in, man, the first day I met them when I was out there, you know, I felt like I knew them for a while. Also with Coach TJ, Coach Hoiberg, you know, they just treat me like family, you know. While I was over there, I was in the gym, and I just didn't want to leave, and it was just a good feeling, and I just felt like that was the right spot.
Now, these guys are professional at what they do. You're a teen. How old are you?
I'm 18.
Okay, you're a teenager. They're very good at trying to market and promote colleges. Is it a possibility that they may have wooed you a little bit too much, or when you were there, you experienced what the university was like, some of the players, the coaches, et cetera, and you just said to yourself, this is it. This is where I got to go.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I feel like they told me straight up. You know, that's one thing that I respected about them. They didn't tell me anything outside of the box, nothing too crazy. They told me strict, like, what it's going to be when I'm there, the work. I met a lot of the people who helped the students and all that. And, you know, it was straight to the point. And that's what I respected, and I just wanted real. And that's what they showed me, so that's where I felt comfortable.
A lot of young kids in football and in basketball, I guess we could say the same for other sports, but those two come to mind, are making the decision to leave high school in this country and head to some of the prep schools in the United States. That's ticking off a lot of people, a lot of coaches here, clubs, high schools, college, universities. They're not happy with it. But then again, these are young people who are making the choice, and hopefully a wise one, on the support of their families. You're one of them. Last year, you went to high school in the U.S., and I think it was Finley Prep in Vegas. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
One of the meccas of the game. What made you come back?
You know, it's my last year before I head out to Iowa State. And I just felt like, why not spend it with my family? You know, my family's everything to me, and I just feel like if I could, you know, get my mom and dad to be in the stands for a couple games and have my brothers and sisters and, you know, friends just to be out, that'll mean everything to me, so... You know, it's not like I'm not getting better. It's not like I'm not in the gym working hard. You know, so I'm doing the same thing that I was last year. It's just I'm home, you know, and it's a good feeling.
You heard a lot about Finley Prep. It's a very good school, an outstanding basketball program. You've got to be pretty good for them to ask you to come to that program.
Yes, sir.
What have you learned since you were there, and how tough is it playing the game in the U.S. high school system?
I believe I learned most of what I am today. You know, I came back someone who has a head on their shoulders, you know, someone who just wants to be someone in life. You know, they taught me a lot of things. They helped me out basketball-wise, off-the-court-wise. You know, there's just little things that you got to follow by, you know, unless you get consequences, sorry. You know, and Finlay kind of helped me out with everything, you know, basketball. Like, they just made me become a better person from 5 a.m. sprints in the morning. You know, practice, school, then weight room right after school, man. It's just a tough schedule. So I just had to adapt to it and, you know, get adjusted and understand what the next level is like.
You know, life is an interesting thing. Every day you learn. And if you don't think that you're learning every day, then from my personal opinion, there's something wrong. You learn the game. You go out there and you play. Tell our listeners a little bit about your position, your responsibility, a little bit of the of what goes on when they go out to see a St. Martin High School basketball game. And obviously, you're the one who stands out.
You know, I'm a point guard, so the point guard has to be the general of the floor. You know, he has to kind of lead things. You know, without the point guard and without like the head of the floor, it loses structure. You know what I'm saying? Not to say he's the boss or anything, but he's usually the one with the ball in his hand, so that's what he has to do, and that's what I do. You know, if you were to come to a typical St. Martin's game, you know, I'd just be bringing the ball to the court, just running the offense, you know what I'm saying? And I'm a pass first point guard, but in certain situations, I need to score as well. So, you know, I like to switch it up and change things up.
Naz Long is joining us. He's a student at St. Martin High School, Mississauga. Basketball is his sport. Very good at what he does. You could have gone to any high school in the greater Toronto area. For that matter, you could have gone to any high school in this country. What made you decide to go to St. Martin when you could have played for some of the other, shall we say, school teams that are known for success?
You know, I just felt like I wanted to isolate myself a little bit, but somewhere that's kind of closer to home, if that kind of makes sense. You know, I didn't want to go to no local school where I knew too much people because I had to focus on, you know, getting certain credits, and I just wanted to, you know, keep my head on a straight path. And, you know, that's where I kind of basically decided to go there with a couple of friends, you know. I know one of the teachers there who's also my coach. Mayor Morgan, you know, he kind of helped me out. Not to say he recruited or nothing like that, you know, because it was my decision at the end of the day. It was me and my parents, you know what I'm saying? So that's kind of where I just decided. I just wanted to go get a good education, heard about their education, and they're isolated in a small school. So that's where I decided to go.
Naz Long, are you eligible to play for St. Martin in the Peel High School League this year?
Right now, it's undecided, but they're still working on it.
You played in the Pinky Lewis Invitational. It was won by St. Martin. You were the MVP. Are you upset that maybe you may not be able to play?
You know, it bothers me a little bit, but, you know, I'm not criticizing anybody. But I feel like not allowing me and a couple of my friends to play, you know, doesn't really help things, you know
yep.
what I'm saying? I feel like we should definitely be able to play because we just love the game just like anybody else. We just want to play the game.
Nazlan, good luck to you. You sound like a bright young man, a great basketball player, strong family support. All the best to you.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Naz Long, student at St. Martin High School. I sure hope the educators give that guy a chance to perform. I mean, this is high school sport. We're not in the pros. Anyway, great football action coming up, and that is the Vanier Cup. McMaster from Hamilton against Laval, the Rouge et Or from Quebec City. The game is next Friday, 6 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. Joining us right now, a member of the Marauders team that just refuses to lose, Matthew Perazzini, a wide receiver, running back as well. Faced with probably his last game as a football player at McMaster. He's graduating, or has actually graduated, and is in his last couple of, shall I say, hours of eligibility. Matt's on the phone right now. How you doing, Matt?
Great. How are you?
Very well, thank you. So tell us, this dream that started at the beginning of the season that forced you were saying you had to come back for one more year. Did you see something then that, I mean, has materialized to the point where here you are, in a championship game for the national bragging rights?
Well, I obviously knew the kind of talent we had coming back, and Kyle Quinlan and guys like Mike DeCroce, but I knew we could compete for an OUA championship. To be able to compete now for a Vanier Cup championship in my last season is a pretty special feeling.
Now, what's with this McMaster team? They always seem to start out slow. The last game was another example, and then they just pour it on, whether it's the second, third, or fourth quarter. Acadie was up 14-0, and with 3:55 left in the first quarter, you capped a six-play, 63-yard drive. It was the first of six touchdowns, and Mac never looked back.
I think we're trying to just stick to our game plan and play with everything we got, no matter what happens. We had a couple tough breaks in the early going there. We had a fumble that was they capitalized on a touchdown. So I think we knew if we just went in there and stayed calm, stuck to you know what we do best, that we'd be all right.
Mike DeCroce, one of the great receivers in this McMaster lineup, also Brad, I hope I get this right, Fochisato. Mm-hmm. And yet you're leading the team when it comes to touchdowns as a wide receiver. You got, I think, eight of them?
Yeah.
How does that work out? Are there just too many weapons on this Marauder team that Kyle Quinlan can go to when he needs to get that ball into the end zone?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for some reason, I guess I'm one of the biggest red zone targets for Kyle. I've been playing receiver for a lot of years, and I've been able to develop my route running skills with some great coaching, and I've developed a chemistry with Kyle. And just, you know, to be able to have all those other athletes on the field, especially like Mike DeCroce, he commands so much attention from defenses. He's definitely a big reason why myself and some of the other receivers are seeing so much success this year.
Your head coach, Steph Patasek, came to McMaster, I think it was about 6 years ago. We had him on this show last week after the big win over Western, I think it was, right?
Yep.
He was talking about how this team is molded gradually into a serious contender, and he was absolutely right. You came to McMaster 6 years ago. I think you're one of the few that have had an opportunity to be in six training camps, although as a rookie you didn't play a league game. How did you develop this relationship with the coach that you've been one that's benefited the most?
Coach P is an amazing coach. In my first year, even though I didn't get a lot of playing time, he never made me feel like he never knew my name. He's had my back every step of the way. The knowledge he has for the game is just absolutely incredible, and I just tried to learn as much from him as I possibly could. And I think he have such a great, you know, understanding of the game on the field. He just understands how important it is that we develop strong relationships with each other, and I think that's a huge part of why we've had so much success this season.
Big win over Western. Some people had some doubt. They didn't think you can do it. Big win over Acadia, come from behind as well. Laval, one more team, As Coach P said to me the other day, we have one more win to go. This is not any team. They've been to the national playoffs many times before, won some championships, including last year. How does a team like McMaster win this most important game of the year?
You know what? It's going to be a fight for 60 minutes. But if they think they're just going to come in there and, take their seventh Vanier without having to go through a very talented team, then they're dead wrong. I think if we just keep playing like we have been, we've been playing our best football. We got a good feel for them when we had a preseason game against them this year, and I think we can match up well. So, I mean, if we just limit our mistakes and play our best football, I think we can win this thing.
Matthew Perazzini, we appreciate you joining us. Good luck. One more game left in your university football career. All the best to you and the rest of the Marauders.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Great athlete and a great wide receiver. Also could be used as a running back as well. You got to see him play, as I say, the big one, the Vanier Cup, next Friday night in Vancouver. When we come back, Stephen Gesso is going to join us. He's 33 years old, a Canadian champ, and he's completely blind. Sunday morning with David Grossman. This is Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Make your friends weep with envy. Win wicked prizes inside the fan club. Join today at fan590.com. It's Sunday morning with David Grossman, covering the biggest stories in high school, college, and university sports. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hour number two of Sunday morning, 2 minutes after 9 o'clock. My name is David Grossman. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. If you're looking outside, kind of gray, 14 degrees. Not the kind of weather you want for November the 20th. But the jolly guy's in town. Santa Claus brought his wife with him this time. I'm not going to sing it. I won't sing the song. Anyway, I was at the University of Toronto this week, invited there by Professor Paul Dennis, who's been on this show before. We've known each other a long time. And he asked me to speak to his students. A lot of them in their fourth year, about to graduate from U of T. They want to be teachers, coaches probably. And we had a great discussion for about a couple of hours on everything ranging from politics and sports to issues and highlights. And good to see that a lot of them agree with me, and I agree with them. Lots of interest and a classy group, also a respectful group where we could dialogue and have a chat and shake hands afterwards. Anyway, I just hope a lot of them are listening right now, because it was a lot of fun being there. And again, to Professor Paul Dennis, thank you very much for the invitation. Our next guest, he's on the front page of the current edition of the Scarborough Mirror. You'll find the picture of him and also the story at InsideToronto.com. And you can't miss him. I mean, he's 33 years old. He's a Canadian champ. He's 397 pounds. And he's blind. And he's joining us now because that's probably the only way I would mention his weight and not get plowed by him in person. Anyway, good morning to Stephen Gesso. How are you, Steve?
Good morning. How are you today, David?
Very well, thank you. And by the way, congratulations on the national championship that you won as a power weightlifter.
Thank you so much. Appreciate that.
Now, people don't know much about this sport, whether it's powerlifting or weightlifting. Some say it's all the same. Some differentiate between the two. Tell us a little bit about what you do.
Well, I mean, you know, to be called a weightlifter is almost like a little bit of a dig in my world, right? Because, I mean, I know everybody in the gym is a weightlifter these days. But, I mean, powerlifting is more or less, you know, a squat, bench, and deadlift. And where competitive weightlifting would be like, you know, clean and jerk and snatch and, you know, so on. So, I mean, you know, it's quite a different type of technique and mechanics involved in each of those sports. So, you know what I mean? Like where I train, we have weightlifters there and we kind of just like dig each other all the time. You know what I mean? So it's a big difference between the two sports. And I mean, people really should know the difference. You know what I mean?
Steven, I've talked to people who say that powerlifting is not a sport. It's just a bunch of overweight guys lifting steel bars.
Oh, my goodness. That is so far from the truth, David. So far from the truth. I mean, we have some of the best and fittest athletes around. Like, I mean, you know, like some of the guys that I train with, some of the people that I know in Canada in this sport are some of the, you know, some of the best athletes that we have. It's just that it's a very quiet sport. It's a very, humbling sport. I mean, you know, like, you know, we're not about showboating. You know, it's all about us getting on the platform, doing what we do, and the kind of, friendship and respect we have for each other.
How do you convince people that you're almost 400 pounds and a lot of this is muscle?
Well, I mean, sorry about that. I mean, yeah, it's, I'm not going to lie. I'm a very big, big man. I'm a bulky guy, but I mean, I'm a good percentage of that is muscle. I mean, you know, I've trained hard over the years and really have dedicated myself to, you know, building up my body in a certain way. I mean, you know, I happen to eat an awful lot. I mean, I'm not going to be a bodybuilder. You know, I'm not going to go out on the platform with a six-pack, although there are a lot of guys in the sport who are very, very fit individuals who are, you know what I mean, they look, you know, very, catching as well. But I mean, for a guy my size, I mean, I'm a super heavyweight. I mean, there's no need of me to walk on the platform looking like a bodybuilder. You know what I mean? So I like to eat a lot. I eat well. And I just build up my body, you know, accordingly to how I feel I need to be, right?
Our guest this morning, Steven Gesso, 33 years old. He's a power lifter, won a gold medal at the Canadian Championships in St. John's, Newfoundland. And he also set four records as well. Now, you lost your eyesight in one eye. I believe you were born with sight in one eye. And then you lost the sight in the other eye while playing a pickup game of basketball with some of your friends or teenagers. And
yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
I would imagine the ball had hit you in the face. And from what I understand to be correct, that there was some surgery, but they couldn't salvage the sight in it.
No, not at all.
I try to imagine what it's like. I wear glasses. I'm visually impaired. But I'll close my eyes for a couple of minutes, and all I see is black. And this is me. You know, I tend to panic and say, like, wow. What goes through the mind of a teenager, in this case yourself, when you realize that the rest of your life you're going to be having to excel and do things without your sight?
Well, I mean, you know, like when I first lost my sight, it was a very big adjustment. I kind of took some time to just kind of reflect on, you know, what my future might bring. You know what I mean? That was my most, you know, I thought about that constantly. Like, what was I going to do? I mean, it wasn't so much about the current situation. It was always about, like, you know, what am I going to do? Where am I going to be 5, 10, 15, 20 years down the road? You know what I mean? When, you know, you feel like, you know, at that age, you got your whole life ahead of you and the whole world ahead of you. And you could be and aspire to be anything you want to be. And then, you know, you just kind of have a setback like that. So it kind of took me a while to really adjust to just coming to terms. And I mean, even today, you know what I mean? Like, you know, I still have, you know what I mean? Those moments where it's like, you know what I mean? If I just had my sight, this would just be so much easier type of thing, right? But, you know, it is what it is. And you kind of just pick yourself up and you just move on and you kind of adapt to the situation to make yourself just go on with life.
I found fascinating your comment when we were talking the other day. You said the only difference between you and me is the fact that I can drive and you can't.
Exactly. Exactly. There is no difference between you and I. I mean, you know, I mean, I use a knife and fork better than, you know, most of my friends do. You know what I mean? And I mean, you know, I'm a, you know, a neat and tidy guy and so on. And I mean, I just, you know, I can't drive a car. You know what I mean? That's the only difference. I mean, I can get around just like you and, you know, or anybody else could, you know, I mean, you know, I'm not going to go out and run marathons. I mean, mind you, I mean, you know, too big of a guy for that. But I mean, nevertheless, I mean, I'm no different than anybody else out there. It's the fact that I just can't see.
Well, you are different. And you have to make sure that you understand the fact that you're different because you are now a Canadian champ.
Well,
and a lot of people think about it, talk about it, but never achieve something like that. And in the national championships, we should point out that you were going up against people who were, I guess if we could use the correct pronunciation or terminology, able-bodied, people who could see.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, essentially, you know, that's it. I mean, I, to me, I don't really think of it that way. I just think of that we're all competitors, and we're all there, you know, to compete for, you know, to win the same kind of goal. And, you know, I really don't think of it that much, really. You know what I mean? It's nice to have, you know, those accolades and say, yeah, I'm a Canadian champ, and you know what I mean? I'm, you know, the first blind athlete to do so, or, you know, so on. I mean, hey, but, you know, my big goal and my eye is on the prize, and that's, you know, the World Championships, right?
And those World Championships will be held in Stockholm next summer. Are you going into that thing with a lot of fanfare, or you want to go in there as the sleeper?
I want to personally go in as a sleeper because, I mean, I held back at the national championships, to tell you the truth, David, because of that reason. Like, my national team coach, Sheldon Duncan, and my, you know, my crew from, you know, Variety Village where I train, I mean, you know, basically convinced me to, you know what I mean, lay low, go in, do what you have to do. I mean, you know, don't go in and, you know, not put in an effort, but I mean, you know, go in, do what you have to do, win, and come home and, you know, get back to training, get ready for, you know, Stockholm, right, in Sweden. But I mean, you know, I want to lay low and be a sleeper going in because I know in the heart of hearts that, you know what I mean, I have a really good chance of winning these world championships.
As a kid growing up, you were involved in a lot of sports. You called yourself a multi-sport athlete. I remember, you were the one who brought it to my attention that I had written about you, what was it, 15 years ago?
That's right. You and I, yeah, that's exactly it, in the Toronto Star in 1996. And I was also on the radio with you.
Oh boy.
Before as well. That's right. I mean, this is my second time around with you, David.
You see what happens when you get older? You start to lose some of the memory cells.
Nah, you're a busy guy.
You've been very active in this sport. And I'm sure you've had a lot of people, Steve and Gesso, mention to you that folks who are involved in powerlifting can benefit from things such as steroids and various forms of illegal substances. Do you see that happening in the gyms?
All the time. I mean, you know, we test very adamantly in the, you know, powerlifting community. It's getting better and better. And I mean, but in every day in the gym, I mean, yeah, there's absolutely signs of abuse of all kinds of supplements in the gym, absolutely. I mean, you know, and it's, you know, it's a lot of, you know, kids and you know, teenagers and, you know, individuals in their early 20s that are just not educated about what they're doing, and everybody's looking for a fast way to get strong or a fast way to build muscle or, you know what I mean, get, you know, a six-pack or, you know, so on. I mean, you know, it's a very sad thing to see, you know what I mean, especially with, you know, the high school kids and the university kids. I mean, you know, like, personally myself, it's, you know, it's not something I'm interested in. I mean, I've built myself up to be what I am over hours and, you know, hours of being in the gym and repetition over repetition and eating. I mean, you know, my wife's a professional chef. I mean, you know, I mean, I eat well, I eat good, I'm well taken care of, you know, and, I got a good support system around me. I've had great coaches and great influences, you know what I mean? So,
well, let me ask you about that. You said your wife's a chef. You're a carded athlete.
Yes.
But some people think that your weight makes you, well, a walking time bomb. Do you wonder sometimes about how healthy it is for a guy to be close to 400 pounds?
Well, I mean, there's people who are 120 pounds who, you know, are unhealthy. You know what I mean? So, I mean, my diet is, you know, no reflection of my size. I mean, you know, I eat very clean. I eat very well. And, I mean, you know, like, I take pride in the fact that, you know, I do eat very well and I eat very clean. And I, you know what I mean? I take a lot of time and effort into that. But, I mean, for people to say, you know, someone my size, I mean, yeah, sure, to the average individual, I'm going to be a very, very large man, and I'm going to be, you know, an awful size to some people, like they say. But
Stephen,
know,
I got about 30 seconds left. I want to ask you one quick question before you go, and that is 4 years away. You're going to be 37 years old, the 2015 Pan Am Games in the city. Are you going to be there?
I'm hoping to, yes.
Good luck to you in Stockholm.
Thanks, David. Nice talking to you again.
It's a pleasure, and I'm sure we'll talk before you come back with a world championship. Thanks again.
Absolutely. Take care.
All Bye. The best to you. Up next, Ian Kolpitz is going to join us. He's a beat writer with the Mississauga News, a great community newspaper. We're going to talk about M&M, otherwise known as the Mess in Mississauga, the volleyball version of it. We'll tell you more when we come back. I'm David Grossman. It's Sunday morning on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
It's time to hear about the superstars of tomorrow. It's Sunday morning with David Grossman. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Sunday morning, 22 minutes after 9 o'clock. David Grossman with you. That's my name. You can reach me at sundaymorning@fan590.com by email. You can follow me on Twitter at Grossman590. Or you can drop me a letter. How's that? Pony Express. It's been a strange week in sports news at the amateur level. Former Penn State football coach Joe Paterno diagnosed with a treatable form of lung cancer, according to his son, as the unfortunate situation continues at that university. And you sort of wonder how long, if ever, it will take to rebuild that name based on what has allegedly gone on there. And look at Oklahoma State University, where a women's basketball coach, Kurt Budke, and an assistant coach, Miranda Serna, were both killed in a plane crash in Arkansas. And you can imagine what's going on there, not only with families and friends and the university and the program. And then look at Syracuse University. I mean, these things are popping up one after another. Syracuse put their longtime assistant basketball coach, Bernie Fine, on leave in light of allegations of child molestation, allegedly, as I say. So a lot going on. And closer to home, Al Hoffman, former guru at St. Clair College, died on Monday at the age of 75, former coach of the year and much more. I had an opportunity of meeting with him when they launched the Ontario College's Athletic Association many years ago. Just a tremendous loss. And look at the Toronto District School Board now with their latest no balls. Yeah, no balls, a ban for kids at one elementary school, which is bringing them media attention across the country. No soccer, no football, not even a tennis ball for recess because a parent was hit in the head by a soccer ball. Now, I don't know, was the ban overreaction? What's going to happen when a kid starts tripping over his laces? Are they going to ban laces? Well, we're going to talk about the Mississauga story a little bit later on, but right now the story that comes to mind is one that involves the G.L. Roberts Senior Girls Basketball team, unbeaten this season. They're all set to defend the Durham Region Championship title. And it's not going to happen because of some people call it a technicality. Principal of the school is very upset. Players are stunned. Head coach and at least one parent also not happy. And both of them are joining us right now. John Pfeiffer is the coach of the Roberts Lakers, and Darlene Stapley has a daughter on the team, both of them on the phone. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, David.
John, I want to go to you first. Tell us what happened.
At the end of the regular season, we were 5-0 in league play. Week before playoffs started, we sent an email to the convener to switch the time of play of games from senior girl junior girl to junior girl, senior girl. We got a response back that shouldn't be a problem. After the quarterfinal games, the convener had made a schedule for the semifinals. Our request was put on that schedule, so we had planned for a junior game first, senior game second. At noon on the day of the game, or 12:30, we opened an email saying that the convener had made a mistake. She was sorry, but she was switching the games back to the original position. It was impossible for me and half my team to get out of classes. Monsignor Parima senior team came at the new schedule, waited for us to come out. Of course, it was impossible for us to come out, and the game was defaulted, which touched off a series of events in which we protested that decision and lost two times.
I mean, we're talking about a high school game here.
Yep.
And we're talking about a technicality, and some people will argue that changing the time of a game on the same day, is it such a big issue? And then other people are going to say, when it comes to a championship, if adults may have messed up on something like this, what's wrong with holding this championship the next day?
That was my question to the executive. I said, basically, we were all part and parcel of the mistakes that were made and this technicality, but the only one seems to be punished is the girls from GL Roberts. It just didn't make any sense.
Darlene, how did you first hear about this, and what did you do at the time?
Well, I've been to every game that they've had this season. I made a point of arranging my work schedule so that I could do that because I enjoy watching my kids play any type of sport. And I was there. My daughter texted me, and I was there when she said that the game time had been changed and that they had been disqualified. So, of course, it's like a two-minute walk. I walked over to the school right away to find out what was going on.
Are you the only parent that feels this strong about what has happened or what's being done on behalf of the parents of the players that are involved? And can anything be done now?
Well, I don't really think that anything else can be done at this time other than what we have already done. And I'm not aware of if there is anything that any of the other parents are concerned with.
John Pfeiffer, you're the coach of this team. You've been on the executive of this athletic association before. What goes through your mind now?
Personally, when we got the last decision from the executive, I apologized to the girls. I said I was very sorry that personalities on the executive level got in the way of this decision making, and I felt a responsibility to address to the girls that people were not giving us a fair shake because of a personality difference between Mr. Dunn and I and the executive.
Many people tell me that the quality of the game of high school basketball for girls is hurting. The numbers of players are declining. And here at GL Roberts, you jump in if my numbers are wrong here. I'm led to believe that you've got about seven girls. That's it, seven girls on your senior team.
Yeah, we had seven girls on the senior team this year, but we were in a transition. We had over a dozen on the junior team.
So of these seven, four of them are going to be graduating. What kind of memories do you think they're going to take with them?
I'm hoping they remember last year's experience when we took them to the All-Ontarios in Sarnia and not what happened this year. But I'm just so proud that the girls won't let this go, and they've done everything within their powers to get this out there so that people could see what a travesty of justice has taken place.
John Pfeiffer is joining us, a teacher in the Durham region for 23 years. In fact, he's coached for longer than that, 25. He's now at GL Roberts High School in Oshawa on his team, the defending senior girls basketball champs. Well, they lost their first game, but it wasn't on the hardwood. They were ousted from the playoffs on what a lot of people call a technicality. Also joining us is Darlene Stapley, who's the parent of a student, a player, who attends GL Roberts High School in Oshawa. And Darlene, I want to ask you, John and I both know that this type of scenario has similarities to other issues that affects students, not just in the Durham region, but around all leagues in the Greater Toronto Area, for that matter, around the province, who knows, could even be the country. Do you think as a parent now that the accountability of the athletic associations and people who are making these decisions, whether they're right or whether they're wrong, and I'm not taking sides on it, Or for that matter, the director of the board now has to get involved, or do you just sit back and take this year after year, event after event? What are your thoughts, Darlene?
Well, I know that there was an issue that happened last year, and to my knowledge, that has not really been resolved either. So I think that the higher-ups, I think, just think that they can, you know, receive emails and listen to the media, and it just kind of goes over their head. And, I mean, we feel like we're trying to do something to, you know, prevent it from happening again. Whether or not it will happen again, I guess we'll have to wait and see, because I don't think that what happened to the girls should have even happened, considering they had gone undefeated all season, and they should have been able to at least play the game and see, you know.
John Pfeiffer.
If they'd lost, then maybe they would have, you know, that would have been the end of it.
I'm sorry for interrupting. John Pfeiffer, were any rules actually broken?
It was a interpretation of a guideline that was, I guess we were being penalized for a misinterpretation of the guideline. I had convened for years. Mr. Dunn had convened for years. Article in our Constitution Bylaw 2, Section 20, the convener must personally contact the coach or the PE head with regards to all playoff arrangements, was one of the constitutional issues I brought up, saying that we were given an email and not a personal contact from the, but they chose not to regard that as being more important than the, we tried to switch the game time.
If I understand you correctly, you were teaching when the email was sent and you didn't have enough time to get and check your email in order to be ready for the game.
As a matter of fact, I had to have someone watch my class while I tried to phone the convener to ask what was going on. I couldn't get a hold of the convener because she was busy doing something important for the school, so I got to talk to their vice principal, and never had a chance to talk to the convener on what had gone on and why the time had been switched.
Darlene Stapley, your daughter, Amanda, along with the name of other players on that team, appear on a letter that was sent to the Lake Ontario Secondary Schools Athletic Association. Were they asking for a new day and a new time for the game? Was there any response to that letter that you know of?
Not that I'm aware of, no. And they were wanting to play, obviously, because they had gone undefeated. So, yeah, there was no response from the letter that they had done.
John Pfeiffer, what now?
Well, I sent out a message to Mike Orsag and the girls from Dennis O'Connor, wishing them luck at the OFSA championships. I think we will be trying to produce something that will effectively give people a fairer chance in the future from rulings like this.
Very unfortunate situation, and yet another one in the Durham region that's crazy. Well, it's crazy. I mean, it's creating a lot of tension. There are a lot of people, your colleagues, I'm sure, in teaching and in coaching are concerned. I'm sure there's a lot of backlash, and as a parent, Darlene Stapley, you're also concerned. Let's hope that DB Adults review this thing and finally put an end to all the confusion and politics that goes on and understanding about rules and regulations and do what's best for students. To both of you, thank you for your time.
Thank you, David.
John Pfeiffer, coach of the G.L. Roberts senior girls basketball team, and also appreciation to Darlene Stapley, a parent of one of the players. We're going to take a break. Stay with us. Sunday morning continues. I'm David Grossman. This is Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sunday morning. David Grossman with you, 20 minutes before 10 o'clock. Santa Claus parade in the city. Supposed to get a lot colder than it is now. Well, listen to this story. It affects the senior and junior volleyball teams at Mississauga Secondary School. the senior team, the defending Peel Region champions, went something like 30-plus wins. I don't know, 31, 32, whatever it might be, and no losses. And then you blink, and you check the website, and there was suddenly 0 and 32 or 33, whatever it is, pulled from the postseason playoffs because of a violation of the school code of conduct. And the junior team also, same, gone. Now, we asked the school to join us for an explanation, but the only response we got from the board was thanks and no thanks. They just want to sweep it under the carpet. You know, nobody wants to talk about a situation like this. Albeit, there were individuals who thought it would be pro-educational to send a message that if rules are broken, there's a penalty. And joining us now to talk about what he has found out and also what I've learned is a guy who does his job very well with the Mississauga News, journalist Ian Kolpitz. How you doing, Ian?
David, how are you?
I'm okay, thank you. This thing is bizarre in Mississauga.
Oh, absolutely. Like you said, it was 30 wins. You know, each team in that division plays 30 games, so they would have gone undefeated, but all of a sudden you blink and it's 0-30.
I was told, Ian, that the senior team was placed on probation by the Peel Athletic Association. Strange word, probation. After something bizarre occurred last year at the Ontario playoffs that were held in your city of Mississauga. Do you know what it was?
Well, I've heard that they are allegations of personal theft involving, you know, Mississauga players and players from the other team as well. That sort of sparked the probation. It's been an ongoing issue. The issue, I guess, resurfaced this year, and since then, both teams have been in shambles.
So there's something like unsportsmanlike conduct, and then items again went missing, allegedly, from the sports bags of players on other teams. And then suddenly, boom, they returned. Now, I received a telephone call from a parent of a player at Mississauga Secondary who said she was, quite frankly, upset, and that wasn't the word she used, because she felt that her son was innocent and he shouldn't have to be one that's paying the price, as she put it. She thought that everybody was basically thrown under the bus at the same time. What are your thoughts about just penalizing those where there's evidence that they were at fault and not, what message do you send to those who are innocent?
Well, the parents have every right to be upset because there's probably a lot more students on that team that are innocent than the guilty ones, but you know, the only thing I can make sense out of that is that I think we've all been in that scenario where we've been in class and there's one or two kids that are goofing off and the whole class gets in trouble for it. It's a measure of accountability. That's the only sense that I can make out of it.
And yet, if things started to get out of control last year, one wonders why even let the players go through another season and a remarkable season. And then on the last game of the season, pull the plug.
Yeah, it's certainly curious. As you mentioned, they went through the whole season, you know, a very successful season for both teams, but they withdrew from the league, and this was only after they realized that Robsa had enough to punish them. Now, I have heard that Robsa has laid down a suspension for at least next year as well. They weren't able to elaborate any further on the terms of that suspension.
So that means the Bantam team, the little kids, I mean the smaller kids, you know what I mean,
yep,
at Mississauga Secondary, they won the Peel Region title this year. So if what I hear you say is correct, and I have every reason to believe it is, that means these kids will also pay the price of not being able to play next year, unless there's some kind of a last-minute reconsideration or some kind of a decision that why penalize the kids from a Bantam program?
Yeah, exactly. And that's an issue that I wanted to address as well. The Bantam team winning the Peel Championships, obviously, you know, congratulations to them because it was a very successful season. But, you got to ask yourself, where are these kids going to go? There was no citations of these allegations against the Bantam squad, but at the same time, where are these kids going to go next year? What is there to be accomplished? So that's a curious issue as well.
What do you think this does for the image of Mississauga secondary?
Well, we were talking about this a little bit the other day, and they're really trying to shield the issue. They didn't make any mention of the actual allegations that they're facing, just breaches of the code of conduct, and they're trying to hide a black eye and really beautify an otherwise ugly issue.
Did you have any success talking with the principal, the administration of Mississauga Secondary, or for that matter, the administration of the Peel District School Board?
Not at all. At this point, David, it was just, you know, can you confirm this? Can you deny this? And even at that point, it was very hard to get anything out of them. They're very tight-lipped on the issue.
Ian Kolpitz is joining us now, reporter with the Mississauga News, covers his beat very well. And he, too, is getting nothing but a door shoved in his face on this issue, which is a good one to discuss. Do you think it's a good move, or do you think it's a bad move overall?
I think it is a good move. You know, with the suspension, whether the Peel board's handling this in a fine or otherwise, you know, bad manner, I can't really decide.
You know, the acting principal, Mississauga Secondary School, she sent home a letter. Mm-hmm. I think that's the letter that you're referring to earlier, to parents of players. And she says in the letter, and I quote, "It is with great disappointment that students who have represented our school have now embarrassed and tarnished the reputation for all students involved in athletics." And goes on to talk, but doesn't really go into detail about what happened. You would think that somebody at a senior administrative level would be a little bit more clear and to the point.
Yeah, that's true. Definitely, because, okay, these are very serious allegations that they're facing. And if you hide it up for so long, obviously you know about it, I know about it, and there's a bevy of kids in Mississauga and one of their rival schools, Rick Hansen, as well, that know about it. So the word's going to break out sooner or later, and it's just going to make an ugly situation a whole lot uglier.
It's all over Twitter, all over Facebook. I mean, the social media are eating this stuff up. And do you know if there were allegations of theft, whether the police were involved?
That I wasn't able to hear. I tried talking with coaches. They weren't able to verify it. I even tried contacting police media relations, and they were unable to get back to me as well.
Does it surprise you that the Peel District School Board has put the gag rule on something like this, just wanting it to roll away, no media attention, and again, the kids, junior, senior, and now the Bantam, pay a price here?
I don't think it's too much of a surprise. I mean, at the end of the day, you are dealing with children who are under 18. Nobody's been named, but still, they're going to face a pretty bad situation, so... You know, maybe they are trying to shield them for it. The intentions are correct, but whether or not they're executing this properly, that's another story.
Are students allowed, you know this, Ian, are students allowed to transfer from Mississauga Secondary to another school for the start of next year and be allowed to play based on this situation?
Of that, I'm not sure, actually, David.
I know Mississauga Secondary has an excellent record when it comes to senior volleyball, at least
yep.
for the boys. The school opened, 2005 or thereabouts? And they've won a number of championships and were expected to do well this year. It's flabbergasting that something like this is allowed to develop and grow without somebody taking some serious action. And I would imagine the action the school has taken has allowed it to fester a bit more and more and then just blow the whole thing up.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's about 2002, maybe 2003 that they've been open since. And just to speak about how great of a volleyball program this was, you know, obviously their Rob's record is well documented, but at the provincial level, they've won three straight silver medals from 2006 to 2008, and they've been knocking at the door for a gold medal as well. Last year, they were bronze medalists, and they came pretty close to beating the eventual champion, St. Mike's.
What happened in Mississauga, is that rare? Are there other situations that you've heard of as the beat reporter for the news in other schools that are similar to this, or is this completely unique?
The issues around surrounding it are unique, but I've heard other issues as well. I've been approached by many parents, and the appeal board, they try to silence the issue as best as they can.
I would imagine you have a story.
Not too much progress.
I would imagine you have a story in the news.
I'm sorry?
I would imagine you have a story in the paper on this.
Oh, yes. It was front page on Wednesday.
There you go. You'd think somebody would realize that there is an opportunity to turn a negative into a positive, explain the situation effectively, and from an educational perspective, what is being done to take corrective measures to ensure something like this doesn't repeat itself, or for that matter, expand to other schools. And one would think that the administration at the Peel District School Board would want to deal with this thing in a very productive way. But, hey, what do I know, right? Ian Kolpitz, listen, I appreciate your time. Before I let you go, can you tell me who won the Peel Championship? Because the board doesn't tell us, so you would know. Who won the Peel Championship? Who's moving on to the Golden Horseshoe Bowl?
Well, at the senior level, it was Brampton Centennial beating Robert Hall on Friday night, and junior-wise, Rockhampton defeated Mayfield.
Brampton Centennial at a senior level in football, dominating and moving on as the Peel champion.
Sorry, this is volleyball that I'm talking about.
Okay, I'm looking at football. Who's the Peel championship in Peel in volleyball, in football, I should say?
In that case, it's Notre Dame and Mount Carmel.
All right.
Notre Dame won it, and Mount Carmel lost it pretty closely. It was 28-21, and they were in it for a pretty long time on Wednesday.
Teams that have dominated in senior football in the region of Peel before, and on the note of Notre Dame, that's Jerome Messam, all-star in the CFL's alma mater. Listen, Ian, thank you very much. We appreciate your time. Good luck, and thanks for filling us in.
Thank you, David.
Ian Kolpitz, a reporter with the Mississauga News. Very interesting how a team can be told, that's it, it's all over for the year. And now a Bantam team that's graduating, hopefully in September, thinking about next September, an opportunity to move up a level to junior. For that matter, some of the younger kids who are very good moving up to senior have to sit out an entire year unless somebody scratches their head and realizes the damage they're doing. I don't know. That does it. We're clearly out of time. I want to thank you very much for listening. Thank you also for your email and your tweets, and a lot of appreciation to our fine guests for their time this morning. This show, by the way, will appear on podcast at www.fan590.com a little bit later on today. Igor Enriquez in the producer's chair, an outstanding job. Dan Riccio, the director of technical operations, also outstanding. We're going to be back in 7 days. If you're going to the parade, the Santa Claus parade, dress warmly. It's going to get cold. I'm David Grossman. This is Sunday Morning on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.